Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast podcast. I don't know what episode this is. I don't have my computer with me, but I'm trying out all this new equipment, and we'll see how this goes and how it sounds. I am lucky enough to be joined this Father's Day by my daughter, Daylen. How are you doing, Daylen?
I'm doing good.
So Daylen, as her Father's Day gift to me, said she's going to help me get the podcast moving along by interviewing me. Or I'm going to interview her, and she's going to ask me some questions. So I don't know how much we want to delve into your personal life. How old are you?
13.
What's your name?
Daylen.
Who's the best dad in the world?
I don't know.
Oh, come on. In your universe, who's the best dad in the world?
You.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Good answer. All right. You want to just start this off?
Sure.
You wrote down 5 questions for me.
Mm-hmm.
I told you to come up with 10 and pick the best 5.
Yeah.
Because that's how I usually do it if I'm interviewing somebody. I try to come up with like 50 questions and narrow it down to the best 10. And then I usually get to like 2 of them. And then I ramble on about other stuff. Let's just do it. Give me your first question.
Okay. You've been a father for 13 years. What does that feel like to raise a child?
Not as big a deal as I thought it would be. I think before you have kids, you think that being a parent is going to be this incredibly hard and mysterious thing. And it is in a lot of ways. It is hard in a lot of ways because you never feel like you're doing anything exactly the right way. But you look around and there are a whole lot of people doing it, and you just try to do the best you can. So I don't know. How does it feel? It feels really good. I think when you were born and I was holding you afterwards, it was like the first time in my life it felt like, wow, this is what you're supposed to do. This feels like complete and full, because I was holding you next to mom, and mom was only slightly drugged up at the time, and it kind of almost felt primal, like this is what it's supposed to be all about. You're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to care about other people, and you're supposed to have a child. This is the bad, not having the good studio situation and trying out this new device. You guys might hear some jingling at times. That's our cat, Snowy.
Yeah, she has this collar, and like it makes this jingling noise. It has a bell on it. Very funny, very cute. So, yeah.
Okay, what's the next question?
Next question. What was your relationship with your own father when you were my age?
Oh. Let's see, you're 13 years old. You know this is a tricky question, because my dad has a hard timeline to pin down. If he's listening to this, he'll be laughing too. Okay, when I was 13, I was in...
give or take a little.
Right. So if I was in 7th or 8th grade, at that point, I think my dad had just moved to Florida, because my dad had produced this movie called Lady in White, which is an old-fashioned ghost story. He was the executive producer on this independent film, and it had done really well, but at the same time, his marriage to his second wife, Robin, wasn't necessarily going all that well. So I think he lit out for Florida, and he ended up just hanging out at a beach house in Florida for a year or two, right around that time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably about what it was. And my dad and I always had a really interesting relationship, because he's a really bright guy and a very deep thinker. And I think, you know, between Dan and Kara and I, who were his first 3 kids, I think I was probably the one that he felt like he could have a different kinds of conversations with. And So we had that kind of a relationship. I think he kind of asked me questions and was able to talk about things that maybe he felt like he couldn't talk about with other people. And I always appreciate that. I always felt like that. It made me feel special. And I think it's funny because between Dan and Kara and I, he probably had his own way of making all of us feel special. With him and I, it was more of on an intellectual level. With Dan, you know, he was always there when he was living around us. He was filming Dan's wrestling matches. And with Kara, they had their own special relationship too. I think, but the big thing about my dad is that he was he's a very unique individual and almost has, I think, too much spirit and creativity for one life. And he's squeezed in about 10 different lives in his one life. And I think at times, like, he felt... I know he feels like he could have done parenting differently, but the biggest thing that he taught me was to really look at things unconventionally and always feel like you can really, like, genuinely feel like you could do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like he told me that. He did that. And he would, you know, he'd say, I'm this guy living in a small town in upstate New York. I'm going to produce a movie. And they produced a movie, and it was financially successful. And then he said, eventually he said, you know what, I'm going to go live in the Canadian Rockies in a hut with my third wife and have a child out in the middle of the wilderness like I'm a Native American in the 1600s. And he did that.
Wow.
And he just kind of makes his own rules. So I learned a lot from that. And I think I've had the imagination to do things that maybe I might not otherwise have done if I didn't have the father I did. Mm-hmm. Is that too rambling? I rambled.
No, that's fine.
I don't talk about my dad a lot.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, I can tell that you didn't because I knew like nothing about any of that. I just basically all I knew was that he lives on a farm and he produced movies. So,
you know, what we should do is this summer when we go up there, we should have a podcast with my dad.
Oh yeah, that'd be interesting.
I can have him tell stories.
Yeah,
he's got a lot of stories. I feel bad I haven't told you more of those stories. He's a really interesting guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, third question. You sort of brushed upon this when we talked about it in the first question, but this one is, what was the first thing that came to mind when you saw me as a newborn for the first time?
Oh, okay. Well, I talked about what it was like when I was holding you, but that was a few hours after you were actually born. Mm-hmm. So this is how your labor went down. I was working out at the Texans facility because it was May 4th, 2005. I think we just finished up the off-season practices, so I was just in working out with Dan Riley, the strength coach, and I got a call from your mom. Mm-hmm. And your mom very calmly said, I'm having the baby. So I freaked out, and I ran out, and I got my clothes on. I didn't shower or anything, and I went home. But she wasn't having a ton of contractions. She just knew that it was about time. Mm-hmm. So we went to the hospital at St. Luke's, and the doctor came in and asked if we wanted to induce. So we said, sure, why not? Because she seemed to think it was about time. And then she went off. I can't remember exactly how it happens. They induce labor, which means they're gonna help it along and make it mm-hmm. come faster.
Yeah.
And then she went off, and she had other appointments in another building. But then within not too long an amount of time, your mom started having contractions, and I'll try to think. I know what happened now because they explained it to me afterwards, but I'll explain how it was going at the time because I didn't know what was going on. All I knew was that the nurse came in and she attaches little sensors to your scalp while you're still mm-hmm. inside, mom, to test your pulse. And your mom would have contractions and your heart rate would drop really low. Like, it would go from, you know, in the 90s or 100 or whatever it is, down to much lower than that. Mm-hmm. And I could tell that the nurses came in and they were repositioning your mom, and they were trying to reposition you while you were mm-hmm. still inside of her. And they were working very frantically, and there were a couple of nurses in there. Mm-hmm. And I just was standing there, and I didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. at all, and I was afraid to ask. I didn't want to get in anybody's way, you know. Mm-hmm. But every time I would just see that heart rate drop and then raise back up. Mm-hmm. And all kinds of things were going through my mind about what might be going wrong. And I think they gave me some assurances that it wasn't that big a deal at that moment, but they had to get you into to do a C-section immediately. Mm-hmm. So the doctor ran back from wherever she was in the medical center back over to St. Luke's. And they took your mom and you into the operating room. And
dynamic duo.
And then I'm sitting there in the waiting room where we had been, just in my scrubs, and with nobody saying anything to me. So I don't know what's going on at that point. All I just kept hearing him say was stat C-section. That means right away, C-section. Mm-hmm. So eventually somebody came and took me in, and they had your mom all tented up. There's like a tent between her head and her lower body.
Mm-hmm.
And they had me come in, but nobody really explained anything to me. And I don't know how long it was. It seemed like forever. It probably wasn't long at all. I heard the doctor say, it's a baby girl, which we already knew. We knew you were a girl, but then, you know, that's what they say. That's what they probably learn at medical school. But the only thing I could hear at that moment was the absence of crying, or the absence of a baby, because that's what you expect, is that you're going to hear a baby crying. And still nobody was saying anything to us. And I'm sure the doctors were talking to each other, and the nurses were talking to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what was going on. And they rushed you past us, and I didn't even really get to see you on your way past your mom and I until a couple minutes later they came in and said I could come see you.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point you still hadn't cried and you weren't responding. There's a score called an APGAR, which tells you how responsive a baby is, and you weren't very responsive at all. So I didn't know what was going on, and I was really nervous, and I was too afraid to even ask questions. But so they brought me in, and I saw you there. You're just laying on your back, you know, with your eyes closed and looking up, and they said later that you hadn't responded at all yet. But I came in and I said, hey, buddy. I don't know why I thought to call you buddy, but I was like, hey,
buddy.
You've
been calling me buddy to this day, so.
And at that moment when you heard my voice, you turned over and opened your eyes and looked at me. And just started, you know, making your little baby face stuff. But then they had to take you away to do all this these tests on you because they were a little bit nervous to be sure everything was fine. And that was really hard, too, because nobody talked to me. And I didn't want to ask any questions because I was afraid that there might have been some kind of brain damage or something. I just didn't know. So it ended up being a long time of me sitting and watching you, and they threw you in little, what is it? It's not an incubator, but a warm, they're doing all this stuff to you. So finally, after an hour or two, I was able to talk to the doctor, and she told me that everything was fine. It was no big deal. I'm like, oh, thanks. But that was why it was so special when I actually brought you back to your mom. They hadn't talked to mom yet either, and mom didn't know what was going on.
Jeez.
And mom was afraid to ask questions. So I was able to kind of tell mom that you were fine and you were healthy and all this. And I honestly, I don't know how long it was. It seemed like it was 8 hours. It might have been like 20 minutes. But it was just it was really, really cool. I try to explain this to guys when their wives are pregnant about just what a powerful moment it's going to be. But it's, that's when I first fell in love with you. Mom kept telling me while she was pregnant about how awesome it was going to be. And I was like, whatever.
Question number four. Do you have a favorite memory of the two of us together when I was younger?
When you were younger, let's see. When we were staying with your grandparents, with Fred and Cindy, that time we built that huge snow fort was pretty cool. I felt it was, you know what was cool about it? We built this huge, like, igloo. I don't think we ever completed it all the way to be a complete igloo,
right?
It was
close.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I was like 4 or 5, but like it was really impressive. I remember how impressive it was. Like, we had like snow furniture, like a bunch of different rooms. It was really big, too. It was like we had stripped the entire yard down to bare grass, and there was like 2 feet of snow originally. Like, it was crazy.
We kept rolling giant snowballs over to take snow from.
Yeah.
That was cool. Because that was like the snow fort I always wished I'd had as a kid. So I just felt good making it for you.
Yeah.
And then probably if I just close my eyes and think about the things that made me happiest when you were little was when we would take you to the beach and you would just run and run and run and run. You just wouldn't stop. It was astounding how good your endurance was. and we would just chase after you. And but you were just like a dog. We'd, when you take a dog for a walk and it gets too excited, and then all of a sudden you have to carry it back home. That was you, because you'd run like a mile and a half down the beach, and then that was it. You didn't want to walk back, so I'd carry you for a while. And then you'd play in the tide pools. The tide pools are the best because you don't have to. It's terrifying when your young child is in the ocean. Like, you feel like you have to just be right there all the time. Mm-hmm. But then in the tide pools, it's just like this massive wading pool that I can just sit back and watch you play. So definitely, I think the beach experiences when your mom and I would trail behind you watching you run were my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next question.
Okay.
Okay. What advice do you have for any new fathers out there?
Oh, for the new fathers, two things. One is, whatever baby books you were reading before you had the child, like, keep reading, because I feel like your mom and I, because your mom had kind of a tough pregnancy, and she wasn't real active, so I had to, we spent a lot of time reading, and we had baby books, and we read all of them, but then all of a sudden, like, once you were born, you don't have any time to read. So I wish I had read more books about, like, raising the first, second, third years, like, all the way up to your toddlerhood before you were born. And then the second one is, like, don't worry too much about what the books say, because every kid's individual, and you're going to underestimate your own abilities to figure out what your kids need and what your kids want, and you'll have different people telling you that this is how you need to nurse them or this is how you need to feed them. And I think one thing your mom and I were stressed at first because we weren't able to do it exactly the way that we had read and we had planned, but we just learned that, you know what, you're unique. And I think people that have multiple kids will tell you that every kid's different. And you were really, really, really awesome in some ways as an infant, and you were really, really challenging in some ways as an infant. And we just had to figure out how to do it. And then the third one is, like, that I still have to remind myself, and man, this is going to make me almost cry. Like, I can't believe you're 13 years old, and I don't know how to make somebody savor it more or explain to them just how fast it's going to fly by. But all of a sudden, when you got to be 12 years old, all of a sudden you had all these interests that had nothing to do with your mom and I. And that's when I really feel you starting to move apart, and like you start getting excited about going off to college already. Mm-hmm. And I realize that's only 5 years away. And I'm not scared, because I know you're going to be awesome. And I know you're going to be great when you're living on your own. But I'm going to miss you a lot. So I'm going to really try to enjoy the next 5 years. That good?
Yeah. I mean, that's it for the questions, but if you still want to talk about any more things, like, we can just come up with more stuff as we go along, I guess.
We could.
Yeah.
This is what happens when sometimes you're doing a radio show, and all of a sudden you realize, like, I'm done saying everything I want to say, and I didn't think about anything else to say today other than my mundane everyday lives. Yeah. We're watching The Staircase right now. Oh, that's one of my favorite parts of you being 13, is that now you can watch some of, like, the true crime documentaries and everything that your mom and I are watching. I'm not so sure you should be watching everything about The Staircase, but it's this show on Netflix, I'll explain for the listeners, about a former, was he in the Army or the Marines?
I don't know, he served in Vietnam. Or was it Afghanistan?
Vietnam. But then he went on to become a writer, a fiction writer. But he found his wife dead at the bottom of the stairs one day, and in North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, and the police said he did it. And then what followed was, gosh, I guess 15 years of trials and various, I don't want to give anything away to anybody. It's really, I started off watching it in the first segment. Brandy's giving us the wrap it up sign. I don't want to wrap it up, Randy. Anyway, it's a really good true crime documentary. And are you enjoying it? It doesn't scare you?
Oh, no, not at all. It's really good. We have, like, about 2 or 3 episodes left, but it is really good. We've been binge-watching it, so. Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good parenting to introduce you to binging on Netflix. Does it feel like good parenting?
I I know better than to, well, I mean, I'll binge watch a little. I mean, who doesn't? But, like, you guys are okay. I think you're
trying to, are you trying to not divulge how much you sneak in watching television? That's what I sense. I feel like, no, you're pretty good.
No.
All right.
I actually don't watch that much TV, so.
Well, thanks, buddy. I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Dad.
Happy birthday from a couple months ago, and then you can wish me Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Love ya.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.